Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Franco family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
I couldn't sleep. I couldn't eat. And I had this overwhelming weight of sadness.
Sheila Walsh on Focus on the Family Minute.
Not just like a bad day, but this is as if someone soaked a blanket in ice-cold water and draped it over my heart. So I'm interviewing my first guest of the day, and I ask her a question, and instead of answering my question, she kind of turned the tables on me, and she said, Sheila, you sit here every day and you ask us how we're doing. How are you doing? And I wasn't expecting it, and I didn't have time to pull up my wall. And there was such kindness in her eyes, and I started to cry, and I couldn't stop. I hadn't cried in years, but I couldn't stop. And eventually our director threw to a commercial break, and I took off my microphone and I walked out of the studio and I locked myself in my dressing room.
Hear more at familyminute.org.
Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Franco family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
I recently had the best visit with Peter Lussier at Hearing Aid Specialist. He fixed my hearing aid, gave me an efficient hearing test, and adjusted my hearing aids using computer software. I've had my hearing aids for several years. I never felt they were working properly until Peter fixed the issues. The clarity and volume are wonderful now.
If you have hearing aids or need a hearing aid evaluation, call Hearing Aid Specialists of the Central Coast, 805-460-7385, 805-460-7385. Paul Harvey's The Rest of the Story, brought to you by Frontier Floors and Window Coverings at 830 21st Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-7878 or online at frontierfloors.net.
The Rest of the Story. Professional actors began performing the plays of William Shakespeare in the American colonies during the 1750s. But more than 100 years would pass before American thespians sought to honor the immortal playwright with a monument. New York City actors discussed the project for almost a decade. How nice it would be, they said, to have a bronze statue of Shakespeare in Central Park. The primary obstacle to the dream was money. The sculptor must be a renowned artist, somebody like John Quincy Adams Ward, and yet the fee for such a craftsman would be considerable. Donations from theater patrons could trickle in for years without covering it. Then somebody got the big idea. There must be a spectacular benefit performance at the Winter Garden, an event of such magnitude that ticket prices could be sky high, yet sellout would be guaranteed. The proceeds could be contributed to the creation of Shakespeare's Central Park statue. But what theatrical event could possibly be attractive enough to rake in such a fortune in one performance? Well, only one. The first ever collaboration of the era's Shakespearean superstars. The superstars of Shakespearean theater, three of the 19th century's greatest actors, appearing together for the first time on the same stage in the same play. And the three were approached and all cheerfully agreed to donate their services toward this noble project. Now, I don't know how to say this. In more contemporary terms, it would be like getting Olivier Burton and James Mason all to appear together in one play. But with the more popular impact of having Tom Selleck, Clint Eastwood, and Burt Reynolds all on the same stage. The play was Shakespeare's Julius Caesar. The phenomenal performance was scheduled for the last week of November 1864, when the superstars of the 19th century stage would all be together at one time for one performance. More than 2,000 eager patrons packed the Winter Garden to its rafters. In the first act of the play, the three great actors walked out onto the stage side by side, portraying Brutus, Cassius, and Mark Antony. They were greeted by a deafening ovation, At the end of the first act, the cheers of the audience were overwhelming, and so continued the performance to its glorious conclusion. And the next day's reviews were scintillating, and that bronze statue of William Shakespeare stands in Central Park to this day. A silent reminder of the magnificent benefit performance which helped to pay for it. For what made that performance utterly unique was that the nation's three great Shakespearean actors who teamed up only that once, gratuitously, unselfishly, were members of the same family. They were members of the same family. In fact, they were brothers. One brother, Junius, was destined for historical obscurity. Another brother, Edwin, was remembered as one of the finest American actors of all time. And the third brother was remembered for something else again. For the third brother was John Wilkes Booth. And 4 months later, he would kill the President of the United States. How many have seen the statue of Shakespeare in New York's Central Park? And how few knew the rest of the story?
This hour of Sound Off on KPRL brought to you by Buy the Book Heating and Air, your local reliable heating and air expert. Call 805-423-5119.
238-5775. 238-KPRL. Sound Off continues on KPRL, the North County's number one choice for news, talk, and sports. This is Sound Off on The Right Choice, KPRL.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Veeley, your host on Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. I'm also an investigative reporter with Cal Coast News. Go to Cal Coast News. There is no paywall. Right now I'm talking with Stacy Korsgaden, and she is an insurance expert, and she's also a candidate for California Insurance Commissioner. Stacy, we're at our last a bit, and I wanted to get into with the California. So what is going in the insurance market in California?
Well, right now, the big issue is still the FAIR Plan. And when it comes to homeowners, the homeowners marketplace, if someone cannot find insurance through the regular marketplace, then the company of last resort, it's called the FAIR Plan. It's not a government plan. It is an independent insurance company. But the costs for a coverage and the policy limits are very poor. It's a very poor policy, and it's costly. So that whole program has just ballooned. It's just huge. It's there's too many people on that and too many policies on that program. And so it's there's a lot of problems and a great concern. So this is the current picture. Okay, you can't get, a lot of people cannot get a regular homeowner's policy through the regular marketplace. They're forced onto the FAIR Plan. And the FAIR Plan, Ricardo Lara, our current insurance commissioner, is submitting a request for, it's almost 40%, a 40% rate increase. So I call it a trap. I mean, they've destroyed the regular marketplace, they put you in the FAIR Plan, and then, hey, we're going to raise your rates. So I find the whole situation, again, it's the system is sick. It needs good leadership. It needs a revamping, drastic revamping. And because what happens if you're on the FAIR Plan and there's a large claim? A lot of people don't know that, but let's say the FAIR Plan runs out of money, then they reach over to the regular insurance market, Farmer, State Farm, USAA, whoever's doing insurance in the state of California, and their percentage of ownership of the policies in the state of California, they would have to pay for that loss through the FAIR Plan. To make it make sense is, let's say State Farm has 20% of the market share in California, but the FAIR Plan has $1 billion loss that they cannot cover. Then what happens is the FAIR Plan goes to State Farm and says, you owe us 20% of that billion. So you can see that it is a very destructive cycle that can be fixed. I want to give people hope that it's worked in the past. but all of these series of very terrible decisions have led us here, and it can be fixed. So that's the biggie that's going on with the FAIR plan right now, Karen.
And Stacey, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show today. I plan on having you back as the important things with insurance come down, and also to tell us why you're running and what you plan to accomplish if you get into office. Thank you very much for coming on the show today.
Thank you, Karen. It's always a pleasure.
And we're going to next, we are going to have Saro Rizzo. Saro Rizzo is a local attorney. He is also involved with REACT Alliance. REACT Alliance is a group that was formed here in San Luis Obispo County after they learned that they were attempting to push in offshore wind energy. Most people were for offshore wind energy when it was first promoted as a green alternative to energy in the state. I was for it. Most people were very much for it. But then as it became, more information became known, we found out that there would be some industrialization of Morro Bay area, but even more so, the possible complete industrialization of Port San Luis. With a huge pier, it very likely would impact in the area. It would have an impact on tourism, on money for those type of things coming in, and it would impact the communities in those ways. Saro Rizzo has been fighting against not only the industrialization of Avila, Port San Luis and Avila Beach, but also questioning the safety and security of putting windmills into an area near one of our nation's defense, Vandenberg Air Force Base. Saro, thank you very much for agreeing to come on the show today.
No, thank you for having me, and good afternoon to you and all the listeners.
And Saro, I want to start with what happened in Port San Luis this week with the company that was looking at building the pier has now backed out. Can you tell the listeners what's going on?
Yeah, the company is called Clean Energy Terminals. They go by CET. They're from the East Coast. I think they came out about a year and a half ago and approached the port and said they might be interested in exploring the possibility of building a operation and maintenance port in Port San Luis Obispo. Port San Luis. If the build-out of the offshore wind farms takes place, the idea would be that these things would be assembled, these giant 1,000-foot-tall turbines would probably be in Long Beach. They'd be towed out to the wind farm areas off the coast of Morro Bay. But when they need to be serviced or daily trips from the people working on them, it would be too far to go from Long Beach, so they said, well, you can build in Port San Luis. It would mean a new pier there and traffic and all the support that would be necessary. So you'd see, ships coming in and out. And when these big turbines need to be repaired, seeing how they are so far out in the deep waters for safety reasons, they typically tow them back in. Now, they wouldn't tow them back to Long Beach, they'd tow them into Port San Luis, and then they would be, fixing the turbines, what? So it would be a massive industrialization, cranes, lights, 24-7. They came out, they weren't really 100% upfront as to the massive scale of it, but as people found out about it, opposition grew, and we participated through the public process of informing the public, petitioning the board, the members of the Port San Luis, and it culminated with their eventual decision not to continue here. But a lot of that had to do with the California Energy Commission's grant of $3 million to CET via the port, and that took place about a month and a half ago. That money was Proposition 4 money. CET was scheduled to receive $1.9 million to further study the feasibility of their built-out plans. Because the port decided to wait before they accepted that money, I think, and I'm not sure, but that obviously played a decision in CET's role to pull out of their future plans in Port San Luis.
You have also been working with Washington, D.C. and the Trump administration discussing safety concerns regarding having an industrial port off near Vandenberg Air Force Base and Diablo Canyon. Can you tell us a little bit about what is going on? What are the concerns? I read your letters. It seems like there's U.S. military readiness, national defense, security concerns. Can you explain that?
Yes. I've been writing letters and communicating with the Department of Interior. The Department of Interior is one of the organizations under them is the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, and they're the agency that leases both oil and natural gas exploration off the continental shelf, and they also started leasing areas for offshore wind development. My concerns here were the proximity to Vandenberg Space Force Base and the potential implications that might have having a the wind farms there. There are three major leaseholders off of the Morro Bay. One of them is called Golden State. I think it's Golden State Winds. They're partially owned by two foreign corporations, which are partially owned. You know, you go down the list and you figure out who owns who goes, who owns who. But as you go down the list, you found out that the a Chinese corporation, which is basically an entity of the Chinese Communist Party, owns a partial interest in the company that has one of the leases out there. The concern is potential, and this has been brought up in American ports. You know, Chinese-made machinery, equipment, any kind of involvement in operations, that kind of thing, with that close to a major, that close to Vandenberg, basically. So it's a question is, had they properly reported the ownership interest to the Department of War, and what potential threats that might have?
And is it correct that Newsom has attempted to make, he is pushing to have this go through and including discussing this with the Chinese companies?
Well, about 2 years ago, I think two or three years ago, Governor Newsom, as part of his, you know, industry, business, partnership, looking, you know, that type of thing, was in a trip to China. And there in China, he met with a big company that develops offshore wind. And they developed further developed a joint memorandum of understanding. And they said that offshore wind development and sharing technologies and whatnot is of interest to California and China. Actually, the Chinese are the number one builders and suppliers of a lot of the offshore wind equipment and the turbines themselves. And their participation has drawn concern in Europe for national security reasons for their own states. And it's something that we think that the United States government should also be concerned of it, given the importance of Vandenberg Space Force Base. So the intent of the letter that REACT Alliance sent, and I wrote it on behalf of REACT Alliance, which I'm a vice president of, is just to make the United States government aware of what's going on the West Coast. And based upon my recent communications and talking with them, they are happy that that we are making them aware of what's going out here. And we're the first kind of, REACT Alliance is really the first formalized opposition to offshore wind in the on the West Coast. There are a total of 5 leases right now, 3 off of here and then 2 off of Humboldt up in Northern California. But the plan is to have many, many more built out down the road. The thing is, the state of California can do what they want as far as on the land and 3 miles out, but whether or not there's ever offshore wind is going to depend on the federal government, because that's where the deep water is and that's where the lease sites are. So it's kind of our position that, you know, the state of California is really wasting a lot of time and money at this point pursuing offshore wind for multiple reasons. And even in the best case scenario, according to the California Energy Commission hearing that I listened to, you know, before anything even comes out, best time would be like 2036. So you're looking like 10 years down the road if everything worked out the way they would want it to happen. But that's not even taking in effect that we have the Trump administration right now, Washington D.C., that's purely opposed to offshore wind in any shape or form. They've been much more aggressive in their halting it on the East Coast, because the East Coast, you already have one wind farm in operation and many others that are much more advanced as far as constructions and plans. And the West Coast here is a different type of turbine. It's called floating technology, which really hasn't been perfected. So the technology, they don't even know it's going to work in 4,000 to 5,000 foot deep water. So the question is, the bigger question, I guess, that people should be concerned of is, there's a, you know, California already has the second highest energy electricity prices in the continental United States. The highest in the continental United States. I think Hawaii might be a little bit more expensive. But anyways, and planning 10 years down the road for offshore wind electricity rates.
And, sir, we're going to take a break, a word from our sponsors, and we will be back with more with Sara Rizzo talking about wind energy.
Okay.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Elizabeth McDonald, and this is the Fox Business Report.
Stocks finished mixed, but the blue-chip Dow and the S&P 500 notched record closes. However, the tech-heavy NASDAQ fell on renewed AI jitters. Financials and healthcare gained, while tech stocks were among the laggards today after data software company Oracle's quarterly forecast fell short of analysts' estimates, and the company warned that annual spending would run much higher than previously planned. Its stock tumbled 11%. Shares of Eli Lilly rose over 1%. Its next-generation obesity shot showed promising results than the most effective weight loss shots currently on the market. The Dow winners, Goldman Sachs, Visa, and Caterpillar. The Dow decliners, NVIDIA, IBM, and Salesforce. The Dow rising 646 points. The NASDAQ lower by 60. S&P 500 up 14. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
I'm alpine skier Michaela Schifrin. I've won the most World Cup ski races in history. But what does success mean to me? Success means discipline. It's teamwork. It's the drive and passion inside of us. And it's why Stifel is one of the fastest growing global wealth management firms in the country. If you're looking for success, surround yourself with the people who will get you there. If you're an advisor or investor, choose Stifel, where success meets success.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Past performance is no indication of future results. Investing involves risk. Consult a financial advisor before making any investment decision.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Are you struggling with your business bookkeeping? Do you find yourself wondering how much cash you have available? When is the next bill due? Or will I have the cash to pay those bills and make payroll? I'm Diane Enos from the Enos Silva Group. I'm a licensed and professional bookkeeper with over 40 years of experience and an accounting degree. Call me at 805-459-6952 to talk, make an appointment for a consult, or a review of your books. This is Diane Enos from the Enos Silva Group, and you can count on me to help you with your accounting.
Do you worry about where to take your car for repairs? Who you can trust? Mike and his team at the Autobahn are a safe bet. Located in Templeton, behind the donut shop, just off Main Street. They service Mercedes, BMWs, Volkswagens, Porsches, and Audis. And the Autobahn is certified in those cars and in repairing Land Rovers, Volvos, and Mini Coopers. Call the Autobahn, 434-2200.
The Sound Off lines are open at 238-5775, 238-KPRL. The North County's listening to you on Sound Off.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Veeley, your host on Wednesday and Thursday. Today I have a local attorney, Sara Rizzo, who is also the vice president of React Alliance. It is a group that is keeping an eye on offshore wind energy and the different items that they need to make it work in this area. Sara, you were talking about the expense of electricity when you go with offshore wind energy. And some other nations that started this earlier are trying to get away from it because it says, what I've read is it causes energy poverty. So you're an older person on a fixed salary, and suddenly you're electric bill is higher than your mortgage payment, and it's very hard for people to make it. Do you think the public understands how expensive wind energy actually is?
No, I don't believe that they are. People tend to think, oh, the wind, it's free, right? God gives it to us, and we'll harness it, and it costs nothing. But there's a tremendous amount of cost, especially when you're dealing with offshore, just involved of the building, the plant structures, the ports, all these different aspects to it. And obviously those costs get passed down to the end consumer. Wind energy is, much more expensive than you'd say natural gas, much more expensive than solar. And then it's also intermittent. I mean, the wind does not always blow. So you don't have the constant energy flow like you have with, say, natural gas or nuclear supplied electricity. So the cost is there. And this is what's going on in California right now is that we have the powers that be are all planning on wind and solar, basically, and batteries, which is also, whenever you put electricity and store it in batteries, you almost double the cost in major batteries. We have a tremendous need of electricity. AI is booming, and an AI center takes up to 10 times more electricity than a regular center that's processing conventional uses. So we have these, you know, all the technology companies, the major ones, they are not building any of their plants in California for that reason. Number one, they look down the road. They're very smart. You're talking about billion-trillion-dollar companies, and they're saying California is not on the right track. Electricity is too expensive, and going down the road, they are not going to provide enough for us. So that's why they're going to Washington State. They're building plants on the East Coast, where the elected leaders are a lot more intelligent and progressive as far as figuring out how do we get cheap, abundant electricity to serve these data centers, but also for their people, because it goes back to energy poverty. Like you said, if you're a person on a fixed income living in Paso in the hot summer months, you know exactly how much it costs to run your air conditioner. Now, is that, you know, you might be paying $300 or $400 a month. Can you imagine doubling that? You know, it's and that's the way California is going.
And the upkeep also, the blades, they think about this. When you live near the ocean, you have major upkeep on different items because of the salt water. These blades, they first thought they'd go 15 years, and now they're saying maybe 4 to 7 they'll have to be replaced.
Oh, yeah. Off the coast of Nantucket, there was the one operational wind farm, which had to shut down momentarily. This summertime had a huge blade, 300 or 400 feet long, disintegrate, fell into the ocean, fiberglass all over the place. A complete disaster. The other thing you have to realize is so much of these big wind projects, renewables, came into about because of the tax credits that were found in the green bill that Biden administration posts. The Trump administration, when they passed the big beautiful bill, they call it, for lack of technical terms. Anyways, they slashed a lot of these green energy tax credits. But for these credits, a lot of these offshore wind would not take place. So I'll be surprised if there'll be any further international appeal or even national appeal for big firms to sit there and try to develop offshore wind. It just seems that, like I said, the decision makers in Sacramento aren't current with the politics, or they're so married to this concept of renewable and green that they're incapable of switching the position and seeing what's coming down the pike. And unfortunately, the California consumers are going to have to pay the price, both literatively and figuratively.
And one of the other costs that we were talking about earlier was the cost of grants. I'm getting back now to Port San Luis. Port San Luis is supposed to be the maintenance facility that will help support the offshore wind in Morro Bay. But they're already doing two studies, and they wanted another $3 million grant. Do you have any idea how much money has already been spent on consultants and grants in California?
I don't know. I know if it was just $2 million so far for Port San Luis, I'd probably estimate it's got to be at least $30, $40, $50 million between the port of Long Beach and in Humboldt. Those were the two big ones, but there's plans to build out more operation and maintenance ports. Although they haven't, the only true one they identified so far is Port San Luis. And some people speak of it as a done deal. It's far from a done deal, especially what happened this last week with CET bailing. I kind of give an analogy. It's not the best one. It's like you're having a house and you're planning for a big party. You know what I mean? The problem is the person paying for the party, which would be the federal government, it says they're not going to pay a dime. And the people are going to attend the party, and that's the offshore wind companies. They're basically haven't confirmed if they're going to attend or not. But yet you, the person who owns the house, is spending all sorts of money getting ready for a big party that might not even happen. And that's what the people in California are doing right now. You got to realize there's so much entrenched interest and money gets passed around to different groups, and they pass it around. If you actually look at the grants and see who's receiving the money, it's far from upfront and beautiful. If you look at the Port of Long Beach money, you got money going to the people apply for the grants know how to do it. Use all the right buzzwords that are in fashion, diversity, equity, whatnot. Down in Long Beach, a hospital is going to get money because the future development of the Port of Long Beach might make the air bad for poor people. Therefore, the hospital needs this money up front now, even though the port won't be built for another 10 years. So, it's pork barrel. And if you have a lot of vested interest to know how to, put the applications in, and the money gets spent that way. And this is, if you look at Prop 4 that people voted for, I think it was, 9 months ago, 10 months ago, it's a $10 billion. And I think there would be surprised to see who actually gets the money and how that money gets divvied out.
I have noticed that whenever there's grant money, things cost sometimes four times as much as they would if there wasn't grant money.
Oh, yeah, and a lot of times, the money gets spent on how they call it public engagement, you know, these types of things, which basically means a lot of the money, you know, goes $50,000 to this local group, you know, to put a web page up to kind of get people to buy into the project and whatnot. I won't get into to names here in town, but you'll see different groups in the county and the coast come up, and they show up at the meetings and they talk, and guess what? They're all being paid to be there, or their group took money to be there because they got this grant money, or they're actually taking money from offshore wind companies. The thing about React Alliance, and we get accused of it a lot of times, people, you know, when we show up at the meetings and our people, no one gets paid. You know, this is all volunteer. I'm an attorney. I probably got already 1,000 hours into this. I'm not getting paid one dime. I'm doing it because I love the area. I have kids that grown up in Avila Beach, and I'm doing it for them and for the people who use it and for the future. So that's the dedication of the people we have. I call them the true environmentalists, and we're not being paid to say, yes, I support this project like a lot of the people. And there's a lot of defamation against our group going out there. We show up and people saying we're taking money from oil companies, we're putting false information. But, our webpage is up there. We invite everybody to attend our meetings and to question as to what we say.
You have made a huge difference. Again, if you go back 4 years ago, I think the bulk of people, or 5 years ago, the bulk of people wanted wind energy off Morro Bay. And now I think it's a very small majority. Like, for example, that meeting that they had, I think it was December 2nd, where the Harbor District decided not to accept the grant money at this time and wait for two other studies to finish. There were, of the people that were for it, it was primarily, as you said, companies getting money for promoting it. And wasn't there a big argument? Well, you need to have a third study because the more we know, the easier it will be to move, you know, to get it done right. I don't know how many studies and how many millions have to be spent, especially if the federal government is talking about not permitting it.
No, exactly. The federal government is the 800-pound gorilla, you know, and if they say no, as of now, it's not going to happen. And, you know, and another issue is the leases themselves. Without getting into technical legalese, one of the letters that I've had in communication with the Department of Interior is literally at the last 4 or 5 days of the Biden administration, all the leases, not only the five off the state of California, but all the ones on the East Coast, I think there's a total, there's probably more than 30 or 40 leases out there. And when I talk one lease, for example, the one off the coast of here at Morro Bay, you're talking about 80,000, you're talking thousands of square miles. I mean 80,000 acres, put it that way, not square miles, acres. It's just one lease, 80,000 acres. They amended them at the last minute, so it took away the power of the Secretary of Interior to cancel the leases if he decided that there's a security threat and whatnot. Under the original lease, if he determined there is, or if there's a violation or there's a big threat to the environment and whatnot, he had the power to do it after, you know, proper notice and whatnot. They amended it at the 11th hour once they knew the Trump administration was coming in. It's called midnight rulemaking. That's what they call it in Washington. And they basically put poison pills. Basically, they said the secretary doesn't have the power to cancel the lease. He can only do so after 5 years of suspending the lease. So that was basically done. So they figure, okay, well, we'll go silent for 5 years. Hopefully when Trump in 4 years is out of office, if we have someone else who's pro-wind, then we'll still have our lease. So that's the kind of stuff, the shenanigans. You know, but it happens with every administration. When they leave, they plant a bunch of poison pills. That took place over here with the five, and every lease in off the East and the West Coast was amended literally at the 11th hour of the Biden administration. You're looking at January 20th, the new president comes in. The ones off the coast here were amended January 13th and 14th. Basically to protect them. So.
And is there a way, I did read your letters. Is there a way that the Trump administration can try to remove the changes?
Yeah, there is. The question, you know, my initial analysis of it is that the outgoing administration in Boehm, they failed to meet the requirements of the Administrative Procedure Act, which required posting and publicizing them in the Federal Register. If they fail to meet those, then basically the rules are, the newly adopted rules are...
Hey, Sarah, we're going to have to take a break from our sponsors, and we'll be back with one last segment with Sarah Rizzo.
Painting, we get it. Hiring contractors can be frustrating. Missed calls, no callbacks, endless waiting for even a price. We do things different. You can book your quote right on the spot. And to top that off, you will have a detailed quote and price before we leave. Painting is easier with Peak.
Hi, I'm Seth Peak.
And I'm Ryan Peak.
And we're the Peak Brothers. From cabinet painting to interior painting.
Exterior painting, both residential and commercial.
We're your go-to family-owned and operated painting company serving all of Slo County. We look forward to working with you. To learn more and book your appointment, visit Peak Painting at peekpainting.com.
I am Central Coast Attorney Dave Duringer, and I believe in faith, family, and freedom. Without faith and family, there is no freedom. So the mission of my law firm, Protective Law Corporation in Morro Bay, is to help families grow family power by transmitting life, fortune, and honor to descendants. The plans I draft include lifelong subtrusts for kids, which protect them from creditors, predators, divorce, and maybe themselves, depending on control. You can even incentivize postmortem transmission of values you care about. But that works better if you get buy-in now. Holiday meals are the perfect time to adopt, implement, and refine your family mission statement. If you are serious about asset protection and family protection, call me, Dave Duringer of Protective Law Corp in Morro Bay. Dial 805-225-5105. Or just click on my phone number at lawnews.tv. Again, lawnews.tv. LAWNEWS.TV.
Hey, it's Alex at Glenn's Repair and Rental. Since fall is here and winter is near, make sure you have the right gear. Here at Glenn's Repair, we've got you covered. Come on in and get yourself a new gas-powered leaf blower and a gas-powered chainsaw. You can also rent a chipper or a log splitter to aid you with those bigger tree projects. We have Honda generators to help you maintain power with those pesky power outages. And don't forget, as times get cold, we have propane for all your refill needs. While supplies last, come on in and get yourself a Honda gas-powered lawnmower, because everyone needs a good Christmas gift here at Glenn's Repair and Rental, 5025 El Camino Real.
Holidays are just around the corner, and if your family is coming to town, give them the gift of comfort and beauty at Allegretto Vineyard Resort in Paso Robles. From vineyard views to luxurious rooms, festive dining, and special holiday celebrations, Allegretto is the perfect home away from home, so your family doesn't overrun yours. Make this holiday season memorable and welcome your loved ones with the warmth of Paso Robles hospitality. Book now at AllegrettoVineyardResort.com.
Welcome back to Sound Off. I'm your host, Karen Vealy, on Wednesday and Thursday. And today I have Sarah Rizzo. He's a local attorney. He is also the vice president of the REACT Alliance, a group attempting to educate the public on some of the issues with wind energy. Sarah, what can the public do? I know that people coming out to Port San Luis, I believe if there had not been the amount of the public that asked them not to accept this grant, they would have accepted it. What can the public do to support REACT Alliance and to support the keeping our community the way it is?
Well, I ask that if you go to the REACT Alliance webpage, you can just sign up for emails, and we let our membership, it's free to join, we let our membership know that when meetings are coming up, important meetings, whether before the Board of Supervisors, before the port, meetings before the Coastal Commission, whatnot, all the different agencies, and we also let them know what they can do, either write an email or how they can do it and whatnot, sign up to petitions and get involved that way, or give them the information to show them when the meeting is, you know, what time it's at, and what they can do so they can have their voice heard.
And, sir, I want to, if we could, I just want to change the subject at the end now. We had you on before. We've talked about the Kinetta Dobe. For those that don't remember, the Kinetta Dobe is one of the oldest structures in San Luis Obispo County. It was bequeathed to the city of San Luis Obispo to be used for park and recreational services. After many years, that was in the 80s, after many years, the city then decided to turn it into 220 to 270 square foot modular units for poor people, homeless, you know, for housing. And they were going to put a bench up, but they're saying that that complied. There's a group, a homeowners association in San Luis Obispo. They came to Saro. They asked him to please get involved. He filed a lawsuit attempting to stop it. And recently, I did a story, San Luis Obispo loses first round in court battle over Kinetta Adobe. The city filed a demur, and the demur massively, I believe, as a reporter, came in on your side. Can you tell us a little bit about what's going on now?
Yeah, the judge, Umhofer, who's sitting in for in Department 2 for Judge Van Royen, who is the sitting judge, overruled the demur. So the city and the Real Party in Interest, which is Smart Share Housing Solution, they just filed their answers. So we'll start discovery and get the information, and then we'll probably we're back in court 2 weeks from now, and at which point for a case management conference down the road, we'll set it for an actual hearing. The requested relief that we're asking for is that the city's decision to allow the project be overturned, and for declaratory relief, declaring that the project does not conform with the applicable law, in that there's no way that it's going to further directly benefit park or recreational purposes, as the original dedication was meant to be.
And yeah,
the city, interesting is, the city wants to enter into a 55-year lease for the with the parcel at $1 a year, with this private nonprofit organization called Smart Share Housing Solution, and then they would build out the 22 units, I believe. And it would really leave, there's no room left on the parcel for it to have any kind of recreational or park facilities, which is the primary purpose for the dedication.
Well, they did say they were going to put a park bench up. But one of the things I really found, though, I've seen this before where the city files a demur with its primary claims, one that it was a suggestion, not a contract, and it appears that Umhofer really sided with you and your case law that it deeds are contracts. I thought that went very well. And also, it discussed the wording about if it doesn't go through, it should, if it can divert back to the owner's family. So it appears the main arguments by the city were lost in this demur.
Yeah, the demurrer basically is a way of testing the validity of the complaint, whether or not there's enough facts alleged to go forward. The arguments will be further developed and played out at a full hearing when it, you know, it's a bench trial, so there's obviously no jury trial involved. The judge ultimately will make a decision, looking at all the documents and whatnot, if in fact there are use restrictions on the property, and if there are, then whether or not they conform to the applicable law on it. So it goes back in history, back to 1988, and there's a lot of different facts and stuff, but I think we have a strong case on it, and it's an unfortunate what happened, but I think it's important. There's big public policy interests involved that the courts have over the years espoused upon. Number one is you want to encourage people to dedicate property to cities and counties, and there's a long history of that in California where people maybe have, you know, for park purposes especially, you know, they have a piece of property and said, I'll give it to the city if you keep it for a park, or different uses. And now if you have cities turning around on any Tuesday night, taking a different action or saying, okay, well, we got the property now, we can turn it for something else, you basically send a signal out there to people like, hey, maybe you shouldn't give anything to the cities or to the counties or for free, because, you know, if the contract is not upheld, then you discourage that. And the other public policy is that it goes way, way back, is that one who takes the bargain must bear the burden. And in this case, the city got the property, then they have to bear the burden of making it for the use of the park. Just because you don't like it or it might be expensive, then you can always say, well, thank you, you know, we'll give it back, or we'll, there's other ways of dealing with it, but you just don't get to say thank you and then change your mind 30 years later and do it. You know, in fact, the cities have a higher ethical standard and duty to act in accordance with the law.
And do you think that there is a chance that this will divert back to the heirs of Mrs. Black?
In this case, no, probably not. There's a couple of things that had needed to happen for the diversion to take place. Yeah, we're not there. The Black never had children. I think she had a niece, but I don't, you know, I was going through some of the records back from 33 years ago. And to find someone, she had moved here from like Idaho back like in 1938 or something, and yeah, if you do a little work, she was a real go-getter. I mean, a real powerful person, in the strong woman, did a lot for the women's movement in the 50s, 60s, 70s in San Luis Obispo, and she had her partner there. Also, and she was a quite famous reporter for the Tribune, believe it or not, I think for over 30, 40 years. So she was very well respected in the community. And to see what happens now with it, and especially some of the people doing it, you're like, oh my God, you know, they, how soon we forget. But we have a lot of supporters, especially a lot of people who knew her, worked with her in the Democratic Central Committee, and remember her, and they tell me, hey, Sorrow, thank you for what you're doing and what your clients are doing, because this is not what Mary Gail Black would have wanted and not what she was all about. You know, I think she lived up to about 88, 90 years old, and until her last dying days, she was quite a character and a force to be dealt with in a good way.
And I've read the contract. She was very specific or what she wanted. She wanted, they had great trees there. She didn't want the trees moved or touched, and they were going to move the trees. I mean, I'm finding it just shocking that they have basically thrown away her wishes to promote this project for a nonprofit.
Oh yeah, you know, the thing is, as far as historical significance, I've read one report, and Dr. James Papp had written a report,
And Sarah, we're at the end of the hour. I want to thank you very much for coming on today, And please keep us apprised of any changes with Wind Energy.
I will. Well, it's such a good work with your company.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
This hour of Sound Off was brought to you by Mid-State Precious Metals across the parking lot from the movie theater in Atascadero. Honest, veteran-owned. Buy or sell precious metals with integrity. Monday through Friday, 10 to 3.
AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.